This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 27th at 10:27 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like now that it's legal, the smell of marijuana will be in the air at ComFest in Columbus this weekend, just like it has been since 1972. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who look for your vote. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, a new powerful lobby emerges at the Ohio State House, and it wears short pants. But first, there have been six presidential elections this century. Four of the six have brought some claims of at least being unfair and at the most, being stolen. In 2000, George W. Bush narrowly defeated Al Gore after the Florida recount was stopped by the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2004, there were complaints by a few on the left that Bush unfairly won re-election because of alleged voter suppression efforts here in Ohio. Then came fairly routine elections in 2008 and 2012. Not too many complaints there. A very small number of Democrats claimed Hillary Clinton lost unfairly in 2016 because of alleged Russian interference on behalf of Donald Trump. Democratic Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts on January 6th, 2017, tried to stop the certification on the floor of the House.
But for what purpose does the gentleman from Massachusetts rise?
Mr. President, I object to the certificate from the state of Alabama on the grounds that the electoral votes were not, under all of the known circumstances, regularly given and that the electors were not lawfully certified, especially given the confirmed and illegal activities engaged by the government of Russia designed to interfere with our election and the widespread violations of the Voting Rights Act that unlawfully suppressed thousands of votes in the state of Alabama.
Made aloud.
The man pounding that gavel and immediately shooting down that claim was then-Vice President Joe Biden. Then came 2020, and outgoing President Donald Trump on January 6th, 2021.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
We all know what happened after that speech. The president's supporters stormed the Capitol and delayed the certification of Joe Biden's election. Now, let's be clear. There is a big difference here. In 2000, 2004, and 2016, the losing candidates, Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton, all conceded and embraced the peaceful transfer of power. The claims of stolen elections were largely pushed aside. The 2020 claims led to an insurrection, and the former president and his supporters continue to claim that election was stolen. It wasn't. Just like there is no evidence the 2000, 2004, or 2016 elections were stolen, there is no evidence 2020 was stolen. That brings us to the eve of the 2024 election, and the former president continues to warn of a rigged election months before the ballots are cast. And as a result, fair election advocates are mobilizing. One group is the Democracy Defense Project. It's a national organization, it is bipartisan, and it has a chapter right here in Ohio. It is led by Republican former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell and Democratic former Congressman Zach Space. And Zach Space joins us now. Congressman, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be here.
Democracy Defense Project. What's the group all about?
So it's a bipartisan effort to serve as essentially a counterweight to allegations that elections have been rigged or will be rigged. We've seen a lot of voices begin to speak up around this issue since January 6th in particular. What makes this a little bit more unique than some of those voices is it's bipartisan, and the organization has board members across eight states, including Ohio. They've got Democrats and former Democratic and former Republican Party officials as board members. And, you know, our purpose is to defend democracy. You've said it in your introduction, there have been questions raised about the democratic process now going back over 25 years, and with the most serious ones being raised following the 2020, or actually leading up to and then following the 2020 election that resulted in the January 6th riots and to your point made earlier, continue to ring throughout the general populace and it's become an important message for certain bases. So the organization is intended to fight back against that, to project to the voting public that the electoral process in this country is in fact working, that it does have integrity, and that if you're going to use that issue as a means by which to either, you know, keep certain people at home by sowing doubt about the democratic process or energizing your base, or worse yet, calling question into question the results of an election, that's very anti-democratic. It's very dangerous, and this organization is committed to fighting against it.
So is your primary role to fact check, or are you playing more of an offensive role in looking at how legislatures are changing voting rules or trying to do other things like that?
So it's a little bit of both. The organization will be assessing statements that are made by candidates, and then our role will be to project that counterweight, to explain that no, these elections are not rigged. We've had, in response to the 2020 election in particular, numerous court challenges, oftentimes determined by federally appointed judges, sometimes judges who were appointed by even Donald Trump himself, that have found conclusively that those allegations have absolutely no bearing. They did not result in any significant alteration of the election results. So our objective is to be a voice. And again, given the bipartisan nature of that voice, we believe it's credible, and we're hopeful that people will listen to us.
You know, Democrats sometimes often complain about voter suppression. They argue Republican efforts to prevent what they fear is voter fraud limits voting. Do sometimes those complaints of voter suppression go too far in your mind?
So, you know, we have what's considered a decentralized electoral process. Every state has its own rules. Every state has the standing authority, so long as it's within the constitutional bounds, to establish rules and regulations around how they want to run their process. So our job is not to go in and second guess what a particular state might do around things like, you know, absentee votes. Our role is to ensure that once the rules have been established, to stand up for them. If there's no, you know, if the allegations against these, you know, rules and regulations around electoral process are baseless, again, regardless of what party registers them, we intend to exert our voice.
Yeah, one of the things that happened in 2020 was the pandemic, and states changed the rules to cope with the health emergency. Heck, Ohio canceled its primary, if you recall, if you can remember way back in the Wayback Machine. And that brought complaints mainly from the Trump supporters that states were changing the rules, which in turn helped Biden. Courts have ruled that, yes, they changed the rules, but it didn't have any impact on the election. Do you think that fueled that conspiracy?
You know, there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there right now, and certainly that's one of them. I think COVID had a profound impact on our culture in many, many ways, and I think it accelerated and stepped up the rhetoric around election fraud. But at the end of the day, again, states have the authority to establish their own rules and regulations around elections, as long as they do so within proper constitutional bounds. They will be defended by us. So, COVID has changed the American perspective in a lot of different ways. I think it has planted seeds around conspiracy theories and things of that nature, but we've seen none of that in terms of something that would amount to election fraud or something that would amount to a compromise of the electoral process.
Yeah. Now, your group, you mentioned the states that you are targeting, and a lot of them are swing states: Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, and North Carolina. Ohio's in there. It does not appear to be a swing state, at least in the presidential race right now. How does Ohio fit into your group's overall strategy?
So I think Ohio is a very important state this fall. It's questionable whether Ohio is a purple state anymore, and I grant you that. But we also have one of the most prominent and important Senate races in the country on the ballot here in Ohio this year with Senator Brown and Bernie Moreno. There's going to be a lot of focus and attention, a lot of money spent by the respective candidates. And I think the organization rightfully believes that Ohio rises to a level of importance because in large part that Senate race.
Mm-hmm. You know, we asked Ken Blackwell, the former Ohio Secretary of State Republican, who's your co-chair, co-leader in this effort, to join us. We asked him to join us today. He wanted to, but he's traveling. Now, he signed a letter written by a group questioning the 2020 results. I would have asked him about it if he was here. Have you talked to him about that? And where does he stand now on the 2020?
You'd have to talk to Ken about that. But I will say this. I mean, he's willingly joined this board. The mission of this organization is clear. And I give him credit for standing up with me and with others in this organization to push back against baseless allegations.
Yeah, we hope to have him on. He was very apologetic that he could not make it today. He's certainly not ducking the interview. He's out of the country,
so
the timing just didn't work out. Looking bigger picture here, you know, you think of a sports game and you lose a close game, particularly a championship game, and fans of the losing team point to the refs. There was a call that was made or a call that wasn't made that could have swung the game in our favor. As part of this claim of stolen election, just because we've had very close elections this century?
So, you know, your analogy is an interesting one. And certainly human nature is such that, you know, we all want to win. And when we don't win, it's natural to look for reasons that have something to do with something other to do than our particular performance. This is not a game, though. This is the democratic process that has been successfully implemented in this country in a historic way for over 200 years. The peaceful transition of power is the hallmark of our democratic process. And if there's any kind of form of competition that exists anywhere that should be sacred and above the concept of blaming the refs, it's this one.
Yeah, there is a line between sour grapes and a dangerous threat to democracy, and I think we saw that on January 6th of 2021. So, again, looking at big picture, Congressman Space, how do we get beyond this? How do we restore the faith of all Americans in the system? Do we need a better system of casting and counting ballots and votes?
I know. I think our system associated with casting and counting votes works. So to answer your question, I think at the end of the day, those who are in political power, those who are in public office, have a responsibility to tell the truth and not to manipulate people based on lies. This organization is designed to put those who abdicate that responsibility on the spot. So, you know, this is going to take time. But we need to ensure that those who are sworn into office and swear to abide by the Constitution, that they mean it. And the hope and expectation would be that when you see an organization like the Democracy Defense Project out there in a bipartisan, and by the way, this is not just a bunch of Democrats and a few moderate Republicans. This organization is represented across the board of the political spectrum. We've got some very conservative, very liberal, and many moderate members on this board. And the hope is that many of these folks are respected in their communities. Media, like yourself, listen to them when they talk. When these politicians choose to use these deceptive tactics that undermine our democratic process and its credibility and integrity, then we're going to call them out. And I wish that we didn't have to exist. I wish that people, when they swore that oath, would understand and incorporate the importance of this process and respect it and project that to their voters. But in many cases, they don't. Not in all. I mean, it just takes a few bad apples to ruin the whole bunch. But at this point, what we're hoping to do is continue to exert pressure with a drumbeat that's bipartisan nature that renders this kind of behavior unacceptable.
Getting back to your decentralized, you mentioned earlier how we have a decentralized system. Would it be easier if we had uniform rules for every state? Each state can do it, but like, for instance, Ohio has early voting, New York State does not. Some states have lots of, you know, absentee ballot drop boxes. Other states have very few or none. That seems like that could open, that gives fodder for folks to, you know, complain. It'd be maybe impossible to get Congress to agree to a set of rules, but would that help, do you think?
So
for federal elections?
Yeah, I personally don't think that's necessary. I believe that the individual states should have the ability to, again, within the confines of the constitutional parameters, establish rules and regulations that meet the needs of their state. Having said that, there is uniformity within each state. So, you know, I used to serve on a local board of elections over mm-hmm. in Tuscarawas County, where I'm from originally. I served there several years. And what I saw when I worked there was a group of dedicated employees in both parts that with political oversight on virtually everything that happens there. These folks work hard. They do really good work. They do really important work. And it aggravates me when I see a particular politician who has no insight into what they've been doing, using them as some kind of a scapegoat, or in your analogy, blaming the refs. So yeah. I think the system works just fine. I do think it's important to allow these states the ability to establish their own guidelines. The question is whether or not, you know, those guidelines will be respected. And again, we've seen clearly in cases, the 2000 election stands out as a glaring example where a particular politician has did everything he could to sow doubts about the electoral process in the run up to the election because he was concerned he would lose. And then after he lost, he did everything he could to foment additional anger and passion around the issue. So I think the system works just fine. What we need are elected officials who respect it.
What is your we're a politics podcast. So what does your effort look like? Are you going to buy and run ads on TV? Are you going to do social media? Are you going to hold rallies? What kind of media appearances like this? What is your strategy going forward over the next, 4 to 5 months, if it ends after 4 to 5 months?
Yeah, sure. So we want to have a significant presence, and that some in large part will be determined or informed by fundraising. Obviously, ad campaigns are expensive, and this organization is being funded by both Democrats and Republicans across the board, all adhering to the letter of the law. But there are ways to generate earned media as well that we expect to exhaust. So things like this podcast, op-eds, joint op-eds. Ken and I have written one. We'll continue to do that. Radio, television appearances, whatever it takes to get the word out.
Thank you to Zach Space, former congressman and now co-chair of the Ohio chapter of the Defend Democracy Project. Congressman, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Mike. Good to hear your voice again, and look forward to coming back and talking more about this soon.
Absolutely. We'll have Ken Blackwell on with you. It'd be fun.
That'd be great. All the best.
We'll be right back.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week it goes to a brand new and suddenly powerful lobby at the State House. It's the pickleball lobby. The chairman of the House Finance Committee, Jay Edwards, had no idea so many Ohioans loved pickleball until he saw the state's capital budget and all the pickleball courts planned for communities around the state. By my count, lawmakers approved a dozen pickleball court projects all around the state for a total of $1.9 million. You pickleballers, you're our Snollygosters of the Week. Can a pickleball scandal be that far behind? One note, Richwood, Ohio, got a pickleball court in the capital budget. That's where our former colleague Steve Brown lives. The view from Richwood, remember? So maybe the view from Richwood will include a pickleball racket. Is that what they call them? Or they call them a paddle. I'm not a pickleballer. Anyway, stay tuned. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please to be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.